Here we go with another installment of Lesbian Nation, brought to you by the tired lesbians of the fourth world. First, let's hear from Mary Flowerpot.
Yes, hello again, everybody. This is Mary Flowerpot with a special offering from her postbag this week. Occasionally, something really useful happens on this spot. Not very often, perhaps, but, well, anyway. That useful something this week is in the shape of a communication from the Fleshpots of London. The following salutary jotting comes from a good friend of mine, Miss Joyce Grenfell, comedian and impersonator, and is in the form of a recorded missive concerning one Sarah Bing, who could not read, and as a result suffered a catastrophe of considerable dimensions with a bull. Also of considerable dimensions.
Some years ago, you heard me sing my doubts on Alexander Bing. His sister Sarah now inspires my jaded muse, my failing fires. Of Sarah Bing, the tale is told how, when the child was 12 years old, she could not read or write a line. Her sister Jane, though barely 9, could spout the catechism through, and parts of Matthew Arnold, too. While little Bill, who came between, was quite unnaturally keen on Athalie by Jean Racine. But not so Sarah, not so Sal. She was a most uncultured girl, who didn't care a pinch of snuff for any literary stuff, and gave the classics all a miss. Observe the consequence of this. As she was walking home one day, upon the fields across her way, a gate, securely padlocked, stood, and by its side a piece of wood on which was painted plain and full, "Beware the very furious bull." Alas, the young illiterate went blindly forward to her fate and ignorantly climbed the gate. Now, happily, the bull that day was rather in the mood for play than goring people through and through, as bulls so very often do. He tossed her lightly with his horns into a prickly hedge of thorns and stood by laughing while she strode and pushed and struggled to the road. The lesson was not lost upon the child, who since has always gone a long way round to keep away from signs, whatever they may say, and leaves a padlocked gate alone. Moreover, she has wisely grown confirmed in her instinctive guess that literature breeds distress.
I think the import of her message is that naughty, twisted little girls grow up to be naughty, twisted, marvellous women. But I'm open to your suggestions here, as in other places, so suggest away. Now, I have a vague recollection that we left off in the middle of something about 2 weeks ago. Let's see. There's a note here. Pick up at this spot. So here goes.
Give us the tools and we will finish the job.
Yes. You may remember, or you may not, that last week Mary Flowerpot was uncovering the missing whereabouts of Sally Lime, the third woman, and that she had lost the search at the point where the engineer had accidentally shot himself out of hand, or haste, or pique, I don't know which, I forgot to look, but thereby bringing our instalment to a premature end. Anyway, I have to tell you that the new engineer is looking pale and queasy. So if we're cut off in our prime here again, you'll know it's because I just love working these techies to death. Oh, no, what am I saying? That line comes from the instalment on Countess Dracula and her she-wolves. So the last time I heard from Sally Lime was 3 days ago when I got this card postmarked Manhattan. It said, "Meet me under sewer lid number 250 on 42nd Street tonight. New developments, Sally." Wow, what a place to meet. She must be down on her luck. Couldn't get much lower, could she? But of course I went, and here's what happened. Oh, it would have to rain, wouldn't it? Just a minute.
Hello, hello?
Hello, switch off that rain, will you? My glasses are soaking. Ah, that's good. Now, let's see. Which lid is 250? 248? 249? 250. Here it is. Oh, can't shift it. Oh, think I'll just retrace my steps to 251 and try that. Can't be much difference after all. Here we go. Ah, that's done it. Are you Sally? That's nice, isn't it? Have you ever tried yelling down a sewer hole? This is what it sounds like. You. It's a bit damp down there. It's a long way down and dark, too. Oh, well, looks like I'll have to descend by myself. Like a tropical jungle. Great Scott! Look at all these alligators. Now I know it's true what they say about New York sewers. Here's a boat. I think I'll just get in it and see where it goes.
All hands aloft, Mr. Christian.
Sail on, O ship of state. Sail on, O union, strong and great. Humanity, with all its fears, with all the hopes of future years, is hanging breathless.
Yes, look at that flag. It's flying the skull and crossbones. Wrong. It's a photograph of Dixon with his arms folded.
Mr. Nixon, what are you doing here?
One thousand and seven.
Bye. Jove, Desard. I'd never have suspected him of being a masochist, would you? Just shows what you don't know about people, doesn't it? Ah, A message. Encoded semaphore. I'll just subtract the 4 and put it in the decoder. It's from Sally. She says, row through second door on right. All right, here we go. 1, 2, here's the door. What's this sign? New York Sewers Realty Inc. Property Development. Whatever next? Sounds like the workers are hard at it inside. I'll knock and surprise them.
Who's the leader of the club that's made for you and me?
M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-C.
No one is a stranger.
Why, and there's Sally lying naked in a bath full of $100 bills. Sally! Sally, is this the degradation you have come to? Is it? Is it?
May I ask, were you born like that, or is it the result of an accident?
Sally, the exploitation, the misery you're causing to humankind, making people live in a sewer full of alligators at an exorbitant rent.
Humbug! Humbug!
Sally, as an old friend, let me persuade you to lead the upright and decent life again and do your old honest job once more. Cashier at the 23rd Street A&P.
I have no sympathy myself with industry of any kind, least of all with such industries as you seem to recommend. Indeed, I've always been of opinion that hard work is simply the refuge of people who have nothing whatever to do.
She's gone, leaving me with just this thick envelope for company. I'll see what's in it. Perhaps one of those dollar bills. It's a note. Dear Mary, you will find enclosed the legacy of 2,000 years of civilization. I will. Let me see. What's this? A thumbprint of a pickled walnut and an empty toothpaste carton. So why not join me in the sweeter side of life? Yours, Sally. Do you know? I think she might be right. I'll have to see if she wants a partner. Sally? Sal? Sally? Sally?
Now we'll hear the second half of the interview with Phyllis Chesler that I promised you last week.
Let me be very concrete here. Men do not love women. They do not know how to love women. They have been trained, psychoanalytically speaking, to give up their mothers, to give up the, quote, female principle in themselves and identify with their fathers, incorporate the male principle. This is called male homosexuality. Most men in our culture are male homosexuals, whether they act this out or don't. They have renounced heterosexuality. For this reason, and I'm not saying that male homosexuality should be outlawed, punished. I'm looking at it as a phenomenon in a patriarchal culture that stays away from women, does not satisfy women sexually or emotionally or economically or domestically, that either is indifferent to or actually fears, has contempt and loathing for women, which is in no way different from the average so-called straight man's feelings toward women. I think male homosexuality also worships phallus. It's phallus worship. It's, again, love of the male body, desire to please men, rejection of the female body, no desire to please women. And in certain cases, is also a mimicking of what is seen as the, quote, feminine or female principle of dress, mannerism, feelings, the life of feeling or whatever. Okay, I want to get back to where I started from. I think that most men have, when they renounce their mothers, because they must in order to become men, can never love women. They may marry women like their mothers, but these women will be shorter and supposedly less well-educated, and they will earn less money. They will not be to them as their childhood mothers were, like bigger and more powerful and not so easy to manipulate, so that they have, what they have in a wife is a mother whom they can get back at and whom they can control, from whom they can get maternal, sexual, domestic nurturance, but who they're not threatened by. This is not heterosexuality. One of the things that became clearer and clearer in writing the book is the extent to which women have not been mothered. And I can't even begin to spell out what effects this would have. And I don't want to come along and blame mothers for not mothering their daughters, because I think mothers have been blamed far too much, especially by psychiatrists, for everything. The fact is, though, that most people traditionally prefer a boy to a girl, or at least they want a boy first. We do not worship female goddesses. We do not choose to go to female doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, judges. In fact, there aren't that many of them. That I think at the root of female psychology is the violation of the incest taboo. This, while for little boys to become men, they have to give up their mothers. They cannot fuck their mothers. They cannot violate that taboo. Little girls must fall in love with and fuck and marry their fathers or men who are like their fathers. Various deities, male deities, are always raping and impregnating virgins. The very model of sexuality in our culture for women is one of incest, rape, and procreation. We have sex only to get pregnant. We get pregnant by men who are fathers, or who are like our fathers, who are taller than us, stronger than us, more powerful than us, supposedly smarter than us.
While tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy. But when I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to Daddy. If I invite a boy some night to dine on my fine Finnan Hattie, I just adore his asking for more, but my heart belongs to Daddy. Yes, my heart belongs to Daddy.
So that at the root of female psychology is the violation of the incest taboo, coupled with a total loss of self and self-confidence due to lack of very early basic forms of mothering or nurturance. When men grow up, when little boys who become men grow up, they get respect as well as help, whereas women very rarely get real respect from anyone or support. They don't have wives. Their mothers will not support them in their careers in the way they would support a son in a career. If they have any form of alienated labor around themselves, like secretaries or assistants or whatever, they're not going to be treated in the same way that men are within our given culture or system. So that it's no surprise that most women drop out of the race for identity or stop having dialogues with their own immortality very early in life, because they would be talking to themselves. Nobody else would hear them. And such women very often are called mad. I mean, those who continue the dialogue. Very often, a woman who is a wife and mother has to be very careful with how she expresses her anger. In fact, women are not allowed and have not been taught how to express anger. It's dangerous to express anger. So they keep it in. Now, very often women get depressed when they keep it in, really, and then they are called depressed or psychotically depressed, and they look for help or they get hospitalized. But most women who are wives will finally, suddenly, will seem, they explode. Now, what they're doing is equivalent to what any man does when he's very frustrated. He lets off the steam. He is angry, and there's usually a pretty good reason for his being angry. A wife woman, so when she exploded in the kitchen, or she slammed the kid in the face, or she threw the pot on the floor, the husband looks at her and says, "You're crazy. You're acting crazy." As soon as women begin to express anger, just that act itself is immediately labeled crazy. Now, I think partly it's a label to get the woman to get back into line. It's like calling a woman a lesbian, because the next step is that she's going to get the consequences of that label, which will be certain forms of ostracism and imprisonments. So that if a woman is called crazy by her husband often enough, he can have her put away. And my book is filled with examples of just this happening. And believe it or not, it's ridiculous. I searched through the academic literature. Women who didn't want to do the housework anymore were called crazy and were put away. And they were given shock therapy and all kinds of terrible medication and kept against their will, or sometimes made to do forced domestic labor as their kind of therapy in the hospital. Women are called crazy if they accept the female role, and in so doing are seen as silly and having no objectivity and being vain and self-centered and childlike. They can be diagnosed as crazy. And women who leave the sex role stereotype, who are achievement oriented, or who are very angry or very physically violent, or who are very sexually active with men and or with women, are also seen as crazy. So that if you're a woman, you can't win.
Why can't a woman be more like a man? Women are irrational, that's all there is to that. Their heads are full of cotton, hay, and rags. They're nothing but exasperating, irritating, vacillating, calculating, agitating, maddening, and infuriating hags.
If men are poor and or third worlds, they'll usually be socialized to commit crimes, and they'll be seen as criminals, not as crazy. Those men who are seen as, quote, schizophrenic, are either acting out the devalued female role, or they are rejecting very crucial aspects of the male role. And there's been some very interesting studies that show this. So that part of what's called schizophrenia, I think, involves a highly tabooed social hermaphroditism. People are not behaving like men or women. And this frightens the people themselves so much so that there's a lot of anxiety involved in it. And when it gets labeled as crazy and punished, then the anxiety level gets even higher. When it gets brutally treated with custodial care or with ostracism by family and friends, people feel there's something wrong with them.
Let's get back to this whole business of the mother-daughter relationship. You say the mother-daughter relationship is, in a sense, the first lesbian experience. What about women like a lot of the listeners and me who become lesbians? How would you see that? An attempt to reintegrate something, you know, their femininity in a different way, or what?
There are a couple of major biases among psychologists. Male homosexuality is seen by psychologists as infantile, regressive, and sick. Lesbianism does not exist. What I would tell you is that you only think that you're a lesbian, but you're not really, because it doesn't really exist. And if you keep insisting that, no, you really enjoy making love with women, or in fact you are in love with a woman, or you're in love with 10 women, or that's how you dig sex, I will say, okay, that's second best, my dear. Okay, I'll accept it. But it's not as good as the other thing. You're settling for less, probably because you had an unhappy childhood, or because you had penis envy, or because your mother was mean to you, or your father beat you, or you're looking for a mother substitute. Now, I wouldn't look at it that way, but as a trained psychologist, these are the things that my training would have me say to you. Therapists, somewhere deep inside, if they themselves are not gay, or even if they are, there is a feeling that this is something done through accident or by default. And the reasons are legion. Dykes aren't as pretty as other women. I prefer to look at it as in some other way. I think that you would find as many, quote, plain Janes in any gay scene as you would in any suburban, heterosexual, happily married scene. The difference is that women who are gay, who are, quote, plain Janes, are not willing to pay that extra price to get some man. They're not willing to be specially grateful to be chosen to be a slave, even though they're plain in face. Whereas straight women, and I'm in no way condemning them for this choice, are pretty grateful to get a man if they think that they're ugly. So that one of the explanations of why dykes exist is because, of course, no men are going to look at them because they're ugly. OK? Okay, but that's that's ridiculous, because, you know, men are pretty ugly. Did the tape break when I said that?
No.
I interviewed 60 women, and some of them were lesbians who voluntarily went into therapy, and some of whom were hospitalized. I also spoke to third world women, to feminist women, to women who had sexual relations with their therapist, and to women who were in the general category of just having been psychiatrically hospitalized. The lesbians who I spoke to in therapy were admitted at the youngest age of all of these groups of women, which leads me to suggest and suspect that the crime of rejecting men is the most heavily punished psychiatrically.
But the one thing I didn't want to ask about lesbians was, okay, supposing I'm going out and looking for mother substitutes as a lesbian. It seems to me that as a woman who was raised in this society without adequate maternal nurturance, it's a very sane and healthy thing to do, at least for a time, instead of, you know, swearing my allegiance to the great phallus, to go and try to make up for a need that wasn't adequately met when I was a kid.
Of course, the need was denied you as much by your father as by your mother. In other words, the word maternal nurturance, I only use the word maternal because the care of children have been forced on women, as well as, of course, the birth of children. I think that the hourly care, the physical contact, the emotional dailiness, moment by moment, between mother and child is something that is a social function. It is not a biological function that only women can perform. So that daughters have been denied, let's call it maternal, let's call it Dionysiac, nurturance by their fathers as well as by their mothers.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of an experience I had recently. As a child, I was taught by my mother that my genitals were this part of myself that I wasn't supposed to look at or touch or anything. And I've noticed that in other cultures the same thing happens. In visiting Puerto Rican families where the little boy runs around, you know, with just a shirt on and his genitals sticking out, everybody says, oh, how macho, how cute. Whereas it's imperative that the little girl be covered up. You know, she can't run around without her diaper on. And recently, in sexual experiences with women under the influence of drugs, I've become much more in touch with my own body in the other women and with the feeling of women giving birth to women and women as lesbians mothering each other and getting in touch with their own bodies through other women. Because let's face it, you know, if you're built like me, which is fairly ordinary, you can't suck yourself off.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that in either matriarchal societies or in Amazon society, which is very different, but still, again, based on the principle of female dominance, do you think that if women were valued from the very beginning in their culture and in their childhoods, that lesbianism would be a natural occurrence or not?
I would say...
I'm asking the question because you're partly implying that lesbianism is a necessary way to make up for and to decry the lack of love that being born female is about.
If a woman in a matriarchal society, or even in an egalitarian society with men, were given the kind of nurturance she needed as a kid, then lesbianism would simply be the natural expression of love between two adult women. Whereas in a society where certain childhood deficits have to be made up, I think they're made up in the context of adult relationships.
Do you think then that that there is such a thing as inherent female sexuality and inherent male sexuality that is best or better expressed among its own kind?
That I don't know. I suppose that if one could imagine an ideal society where children were raised in an ideal way and people were treated equally, that people might fall in love, if they fell in love in such a society, if our concepts of love applied to it, with both sexes. I honestly don't know. I think in such a society we'd even be physically different.
I think right now for women you have to look not at a label and not at an ideal, but at exactly what is. I think that women need to be respected and tenderly indulged, as well as honestly spoken to. I think expectations from one woman to another have to be very high and very urgent, but tenderness has to match it, and understanding also. Now, you don't always get this in a gay relationship. You hardly ever get it in a straight relationship. You can very often get it without sex at all, no matter who you're with. Our culture is very anti-sexual, perhaps even more than anything else. And it's very difficult to be friendly with one's lovers or to have sex with one's friends. Just being a lesbian does not ensure being a sister or being a mother or being a midwife to the birth of masses of women into the mainstream of humanity or into their own identities. Sometimes women who are more safely distant from the barricades can have the luxury of greater understanding or even greater gifts of self to other women than, let's say, a woman who is more in a barricade, as gay women are, where the fight for survival psychically is more brutal and more difficult. Despite the recent honeymoon flush of Dyke Nation and Dyke Sisterhood and Dyke Power, these are ideals, these are not realities.
The problem sometimes with, well, with what I've seen of the Dyke separatist movement in New York is an unwillingness to treat heterosexual women with the respect they deserve and with the understanding. It's sort of like, you denied us, you fucked us over, and we are going to get back now.
That's like blaming mommy instead of blaming daddy. And I think before any blow is struck by a woman against a woman, the last man has got to be killed.
As they lift their rifles higher, all shots ready, aim, fire! Oh, ho, ho!
Men, you should start, you know, expressing the realities of horizontal hostility, and not before, because then that's a mistake. While I'm not a pacifist, I don't think that women can be appealed to by other women through force. Men can be appealed to through force, but not women. I think that if women become stronger and have a greater sense of joy in a relationship, including a sexual relationship with another woman, that will eventually become clear to other women. And simply through examples, women will either get some courage to experiment or not. But the choice has to always be that woman's. You cannot come in with a line, with a message, with a club, and hit a woman over the head with it, because you will not get mass response. It won't work.
Lesbian Nation was produced tonight by Martha Shelley and Mary Flowerpot, with technical assistance from Manya LaBruja and Peter Zanger.